It's Wednesday and time for the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
This week, we're knee-deep in results from yesterday's primaries. Primaries in New York, in Maryland, Arizona, Rhode Island, five more states, and the District of Columbia. Almost too much fun. Did you vote yesterday? If you have questions about the results or want the singular analysis of political junkie Ken Rudin, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And Ken Rudin is sitting across from me here in Studio 3A. He's NPR's political editor, author of the Political Junkie column on NPR's website, and he co-hosts a weekly podcast called It's All Politics, also on our website. Hi, Ken. Late night last night?
A wonderful night.
Yeah.
Well, certainly a wonderful night for the White House, if you look at the Rhode Island results.
Well, we'll get to those in a minute, but let's begin with Maryland, where voting did not go very smoothly. A lot of critics of balloting have a lot of new ammunition.
It sounds like that all the preparations that were made in the states around the country, all for naught. Voters turned out in Montgomery County, Maryland, which is a D.C. suburb of D.C., and there were either no ballots left for them. They couldn't do a write-in ballots. They couldn't do paper ballots. Some of the paper ballots that they had left were in Spanish only, and they were told, well, come back later. I mean, if there's anything that could discourage voters, mm-hmm. it's voters who come out to vote at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning and say that they just can't do it.
There was electronic voting supposed to be in Montgomery County, and the company, Diebold, forgot to hand out, or somebody forgot, it's the Diebold machines, but somebody forgot to hand out the little, cards that activate the system.
To allow the machines to work. It's unbelievable.
And a Maryland institution has suffered the first election loss in a 55-year career. And I'm speaking, of course, about the former mayor of Baltimore, former governor of Maryland, and soon former comptroller, William Donald Schaefer.
Well, it's not a national story, but the fact is that William Donald Schaefer is like, I think he's 84 years old. He's a cantankerous kind of guy who always makes inappropriate remarks about women and gays and things like that. And it finally caught up to him. And he finished actually third in yesterday's primary, and he's not going to be around any longer. Mm-hmm. But he'd been around for a long, long time in Maryland politics.
Getting on to the Senate primary in the Democratic Party, Kwesi Mfume, the former head of the NAACP, lost to Democratic nominee Ben Cardin, a 10-year member of Congress, who will face the Republican nominee, Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele, for the Senate seat. And an interesting primary, and it could be an interesting general, too.
Absolutely. It's not a surprise. Cardin has been around, as he said, since 1986, elected to Congress in 86. And he's kind of a plodding kind of candidate. What was most interesting about the primary is that a lot of people in the media were trying to make it out a white versus black issue, even though there were 18 Democrats in the primary. Ben Cardin, who was white, Mfume, who was black, and they thought that it would be, on racial lines. But it was not a racial election at all. It was really about Cardin had tons of money, tons of endorsements, and Mfume had the personality and the charisma that Cardin doesn't have. But mm-hmm. but after Cardin won last night, Mfume said, look, I'll be proud for him to be my senator, and it'll be a United Democratic Party. A lot of Republicans were hoping that whoever won, either Cardin or Mfume, the supporters of the losing candidate might switch to Michael Steele, another African-American candidate who's a Republican nominee in November.
But is still regarded as having a pretty good shot, even though Maryland, 2-1 Democratic registration.
Right, and no Republican has been elected to the Senate from Maryland since 1980, but Democrats are still given a shot, let's call it leaning Democrat right now.
We're going to take a short break now, but we'll have more Political Junkie when we return, and we'll find out what yesterday's Rhode Island primary, Lincoln Chafee, the incumbent senator, managed to hang on to win, what that election means for the state and for the Republican control of the United States Senate. If you have questions about any of the primaries, including those in Maryland and Rhode Island, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now let's get back to the Political Junkie in our conversation about yesterday's primary elections and the fall midterms. We're going to move now to the highly anticipated results in Rhode Island. And NPR's political editor Ken Rudin still with us and our Political Junkie. We're going to hear from those of you interested in yesterday's results in Rhode Island, particularly Rhode Island voters. How are you going to vote come November? Going to be very interesting. And email us, talk@npr.org or give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Ken Rudin, it was thought that Lincoln Chafee had an uphill battle in that Republican primary.
Actually, I thought he would lose. Look, he's the only Republican senator to vote against going to war in Iraq, the only Republican senator to vote against Samuel Alito's Supreme Court. He has opposed President Bush on tax cuts. He actually said he voted against President Bush in 2004. He wrote in Bush's father. So how does the White House react? They want Lincoln Chafee to win, and they endorsed him over a very conservative challenger in yesterday's primary, putting millions of dollars attacking the conservative, Stephen Laffey, not because they disagree with Laffey's positions, but they feared that Laffey could not hold the seat for the Republicans in November, and Chafee could.
Mm-hmm. Joining us now is Wendy Schiller, political science professor at Brown University, who's been following this primary very closely, as you might imagine. She's with us by phone from her office in Providence. Nice of you to be with us today.
Good afternoon.
Were you surprised as well?
I was surprised, not so much that Chafee actually won, but by the margin of victory. He won big. And I think all of us were surprised, A, at the turnout. We knew that if it was a large turnout, Chafee would win. But he really won big. A couple of thousand votes may not seem like a lot to a lot of your listeners, but in a small state like Rhode Island, that's a very big margin of victory. And he won so big that he's got a lot of momentum now going into the general election. I mean, he's one of the few incumbents that had a primary challenge and actually benefited from it. Hmm. He emerges stronger now, I think, than he was before the primary.
Any idea yet of who voted for him?
Well, we know that there was a core conservative group within the Rhode Island Republican Party that voted for Laffey that was always going to vote for Laffey. We know that a lot of the Republicans got out to vote yesterday. I mean, independents voted for Chafee, but we didn't see that many Democrats swinging over, you know, re-registering as independents and voting for Chafee. What was happening was Rhode Island Republicans really came out and forced to vote, and the independents. And I think in the end of the day, Chafee ran some advertising that suggested he would carry himself better in the Senate, that he knew how to be a senator. He was senatorial with a capital S. And he made Laffey out, his challenger, to be somewhat amateurish and possibly even a potential embarrassment. And those ads ran repeatedly, continuously for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And I think they were effective.
Let's get a listener in on the conversation. This is Bob. Bob's calling us from Toledo, Ohio.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, Do the results in Rhode Island perhaps signal that the pendulum, which has been swinging pretty hard right of late, is maybe going back towards the center? And even the very conservatives are recognizing that a more moderate position is going to be desirable to the electorate.
Wendy Schiller, what do you think?
Well, I think it depends who's swinging that pendulum. I think what's happening now is that at the very highest ranks of the National Republican Party, they're looking at a landscape that says, look, you can't run on the very, very right wing of the Republican Party anymore and win in the numbers that you've been winning for a decade. I think the caller's absolutely right, that even within the Republican Party, there's a recognition now at all levels that we have to at least support moderates where we can, where they can win.
It's interesting that you had Tony Snow, the new White House press secretary, saying today that, we support Lincoln Chafee. We're much for his election. Republicans, he said, consider him. Trying to get the members of the party. He said, don't march in lockstep. But the most important thing is he's a loyal Republican and we're glad to have him aboard. I think that's a new definition of loyal Republican.
Well, the key thing to remember is that each seat in the Senate counts. And with Chafee, a Republican, he stood firm. He never changed his party. He never even flirted with the idea of changing his party. He gives the Republicans procedural control of the U.S. Senate. And that means control of the committees, the floor, the agenda, and even, you know, helping towards getting cloture. Every additional Republican seat helps get cloture, which is to shut off a filibuster. So they need Chafee. They need him very badly. I would argue they're willing to postpone the Bolton vote just to save Chafee's seat.
That's the U.S. U.S. ambassador,
correct,
to the United Nations.
Right, which they postponed last week, and that was because Chafee had a tough primary, and they want to make sure they keep control of the U.S. Senate. And if that means getting into bed with Lincoln Chafee and accepting his constant defection from the party line, they seem absolutely willing to do that.
Ken Rudin here. Wendy, I have a question which is interesting. Why, given the fact that there were no Democratic primaries for the governor's seat or the Senate seat, why didn't some Machiavellian Democrats switch over and vote for Laffey, figuring he was the easier to beat in November?
Well, I think, you know, there's a tradition among voters in both parties, Republican and Democrat, and I think voters are only willing to go so far, and that's very true of Rhode Island. You may want Steve Laffey rather than Lincoln Chafee, but that would require you to actually sign up as a Republican and vote as a Republican. And I think for a lot of Democrats, that was an untenable position. It's trouble, it's inconvenience, and in the end of the day, what if Laffey won? What if Chafee won? I mean, you're voting for a Republican. What if Steve Laffey made a big surge and ended up beating Sheldon Whitehouse, the Democratic challenger, in November, and then you'd have Steve Laffey in the U.S. Senate? So it's a risky proposition for voters to be that Machiavelli, and that's strategic. And I think a lot of voters can't quite swallow voting for the other side, even when it appears it might help them out in November.
Mm-hmm. Bob, by the way, thanks very much. I forgot you were still on the line. Appreciate the call. Let me ask you, Wendy, as you look ahead now to November, the fact that Lincoln Chafee, as you say, came out of this primary stronger than he went in, but he still faces that tough race, Mr. Whitehouse, a great political name, that's not going to be easy.
He faces a tough competition. What's so interesting in this race is that Lincoln Chafee will emphasize Lincoln Chafee, the man, Lincoln Chafee, the senator, the independent, the maverick, identifying with the voters and the constituents individually, really trying to connect at a local level. Sheldon Whitehouse's challenger is going to take the National Democratic Party line and say, even though Link Chafee may be a nice guy, he's still a Republican, and the Republicans have taken us in the wrong direction. That's going to be the Democratic message. That's going to be the Democratic message nationally, and that's what the campaign's going to be about. It's going to be pitting a national message versus a local favorite son. And I think that's the only way Sheldon Whitehouse can beat Lincoln Chafee, who's a fairly popular guy, is to run a campaign that ties him directly not only to Bush but to all the Republican leadership in the House and Senate and Republican Party policies. You know, that's the only way I think he can emerge really victorious, because on a one-to-one basis, they look quite similar. And I don't know that Sheldon Whitehouse can distinguish himself individually. He's really got to hammer Lincoln Chafee and make him responsible for the Republican Party policies that are enacted today.
Wendy Schiller, thanks very much. Appreciate your time. Wendy Schiller, professor of political science at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. She came to us today by phone from her office there. Well, let's get some other callers in. This is Saeed. Saeed's calling us from Detroit.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question regards the 5th Congressional District in Minnesota, where there's a possibility of the first Muslim American to be elected to Congress. And I was wondering that, I mean, this might be ironic, but if he wins, which it seems like he will because it's such a heavily Democratic district, do you feel that the White House might try to spin it by saying that this is a sign of pluralism in America after 9/11?
Wouldn't it be a sign of pluralism in America?
I beg your pardon?
Wouldn't it be a sign of pluralism in America?
I'm sorry. I can barely hear you.
All right. Well, Saeed, thanks very much for the call, and we'll get an answer. Ask Ken to talk about it.
Well, I would imagine the White House is going to ignore this race completely, not because Ellison is going to be the first Muslim ever elected to Congress, and he will win. You're absolutely right. It's an overwhelmingly Democratic district. It's in the middle of Minneapolis. Congressman Martin Szabo is retiring after a gazillion terms, and the Republicans don't have a shot. But what was interesting about the primary race is that Ellison was forced to defend his relationship with Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam founder, and every time Ellison was put on the spot, he deflected it with humor and charisma, and he's just a really sharp kind of candidate. So you know, in this age of divisiveness and wariness about Muslim relationships, Ellison's going to be a pretty interesting character to serve in Congress.
And speaking of pluralism, he's also likely to be. We were talking the word tantamount before this, but anyway, he's likely to be the first minority elected to Congress from the state of Minnesota.
That's correct.
Yeah. Anyway, let's see if we can get another caller in. This is Justin. Justin's with us from Baltimore.
Yes. I was calling to ask what your opinion of the Michael Steele's candidacy was in Maryland. He's made a couple of statements that make it sound like he's interested in being a moderate Republican, but the way he's done it has been kind of backdoor. He's made comments and then and off the record, and then admitted that he made them, and then some of his ads also seem a little bit
Yeah, he doesn't mention the R word an awful lot in his ads. Michael Steele is currently the lieutenant governor in the state of Maryland, and African-American has got the Republican Senate nomination. Ken.
Right, and Justin makes a good point that in an off-the-record conversation with reporters, Michael Steele really basically trashed the Bush administration, trashed their policies of the war in Iraq, behavior to the cities. And had he come forward and said, yes, this is how I feel, he may have been, you know, somewhat attractive to independent voters, because you can't win in Republican voters alone in Maryland because it's overwhelmingly Democratic. But the fact is, at first he denied saying them. Then he, you know, said, well, I didn't really mean that. And I think whatever kind of independence that he tried, the message he tried to give to these reporters, I think just got lost in the translation.
Thanks, Justin.
Thank you.
We're talking with our political junkie, political editor Ken Rudin, who also writes the Political Junkie column on NPR.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email question from Tom in Arizona. Can you please talk about Jim Graff's win in Arizona?
Right, Randy Graff. And this is exactly what I'd love to talk about, because we're talking about Rhode Island, how the White House really worked hard to get the moderate liberal over the conservative, which was ironic. Well, the White House tried to do the same exact thing in Arizona 8. Jim Colby, the Republican, is retiring after a bunch of terms, and a very conservative anti-illegal immigration candidate, Randy Graff, won a three-way nomination. The moderates couldn't unite behind one candidate. Graff won with, I think, 46% of the vote. And White House Republicans, the national Republicans, told the voters, don't elect Graff, don't nominate Graff. He's not going to win the seat. He's not going to hold the seat for the Republicans in November. But given the fact that the moderates couldn't get their act together, they backed two separate candidates, and Graff seemed to win. I mean, won a plurality, but he won the Republican nomination. And Democrats feel this is going to be a good chance for a pickup for them, because Graff is very polarizing. As a matter of fact, the way I found out last night that Graff won, I got an email from the Minutemen, the group, defending our border, with Mexico. And it was the Minutemen who was heralding Randy Graff's victory in the primary.
Primary elections also in New York yesterday. And, of course,
I stayed up late for that one.
Of course. Yeah. Real cliffhanger in that.
Right.
Yeah. But a lot of people were interested after Connecticut, where an out of the blue anti-war challenger dethroned Joe Lieberman, and somebody else tried to do the same, or at least mount a challenge to Hillary Clinton.
Right. Jonathan Tessini was an anti-war candidate who tried to emulate what Ned Lamont did with Joe Lieberman. The problem, of course, and I've said this before, is that Hillary Clinton had $45 million at her disposal, and Tessini had $4.73. Even the weekend before the primary, Jonathan Tessini was seen at subway stops saying, "Hi, I'm Jonathan Tessini," and everybody saying, "Who? What?" You know. So he had no money. He really, and plus the fact there's such a big difference between Hillary Clinton and Joe Lieberman on the war, on how Democrats should respond to President Bush. So it really wasn't a good comparison, but Tessini tried to make it such. But again, he only got 19-20% of the vote, and that was it. Hillary Clinton not only on the way to an easy second term in November against a Republican candidate, but perhaps bigger and better things beyond that.
Let's go to Josh. Josh calling us from San Jose in California.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to see if your guests would comment on the primary in Vermont and Bernie Sanders' win with being an independent for the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. Well, Vermont's a fascinating story. First of all, you have Jim Jeffords, who was a Republican who switched to becoming an independent and briefly gave the control of the Senate to the Democratic Party. Jeffords is retiring after three or four terms. Bernie Sanders is the only independent member of the House. He's a self-avowed socialist. Democrats nominated Bernie Sanders, even though Bernie Sanders will not accept the Democratic nomination. But they did that in yesterday's primary because they did not want another Democrat siphoning off votes from Sanders in November. So even though he has a Democratic line, he's going to refuse it. Sanders, it may be the first time in history where an independent Senate is retiring and another independent will take his place. Bernie Sanders, a heavily favored over the Republican candidate Rich Tarrant, and Sanders looks on his way to winning the Senate seat.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Anti-war Democrats opposed to an independent running in Connecticut, supporting the independent run in Vermont.
Well, the Democratic Party really is Bernie Sanders in Vermont. I mean, they've had Democratic candidates for governor, but Bernie Sanders has been around a long time. He's the most popular politician by far in the state, and Democrats are very eager to say, look, we'll give you the line. He's going to remain as an independent, but of course, as he did in the House, he will caucus, he will vote with the Democratic Party.
Josh, thanks very much.
Thank you.
After this, how many primaries do we have left?
Next Tuesday, we have Washington State and Massachusetts. We have a pretty interesting gubernatorial primary in Massachusetts, Democratic side. Democrats haven't won the seats in Michael Dukakis in 1986. And then on the 23rd, September 23rd, Saturday, we have Daniel Akaka, not Makaka in Virginia, but Daniel Akaka. He's 84 years old. He has a tough primary race with a Congressman Ed Case. It's really about ambition and a time for a change. And Akaka could fall to a primary, but again, it's a safe Democratic seat. And that's the last of the primary. There's also Louisiana on Election Day, which is a very odd state. All the candidates run on the same ballot, regardless of party.
And there's always a possibility of a runoff there sometimes.
And yes, but there's nothing at stake except for House races. No senator or gubernatorial race there.
Mm-hmm. As you look back on this primary season, what surprised you?
Well, certainly the Chafee win, yes, they did. A lot of people are talking about that there's a throw-the-bums-out attitude. I really don't see that. I think I could make the case that Joe Schwartz, who lost in Michigan, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, who lost in Georgia, Joe Lieberman, all lost for particular reasons, but not because it's an anti-incumbent mood. There may be that in November. That may happen. But so far, we haven't seen it. And again, as one of the earlier callers said, it's very possible that Lincoln Chafee's win may be better news for the Republican Party than the GOP has been led to believe in the last couple of weeks.
Well, join us next week, and we'll do a look ahead to the fall elections with almost all of the primaries done. And of course, we'll look at the primaries that had happened the previous day. Political junkie Ken Rudin, thanks very much for being with
us. Thanks, Neil.
You can read his column at npr.org. I'm Neil Cownan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And